Sebastian Larkhines in New Delhi, who's going to speak to us on one year of the gods, religious movements in India.
Good afternoon, friends. Thank you. As you can see that I would not be talking just about the Hindu religious tokens, but about the religious tokens of other religions. And India, as you know, that it's a land of diverse religious faiths and beliefs. Some of the religions, like they were originated in India, and then almost all the religions of the world, they are represented. So it's quite broad-based that way. Now, the theme of this conference, as we have seen since morning, that the representation of the divine power, whether it's in the architectural monuments and or in the sculptural forms, is common in different religions. And these monuments and sculptures have been studied by archaeologists and art historians from a number of point of views. The paper in the morning session by Shailendra, which depicted the coins as the vehicles of the religious beliefs and of the issuers in many of the cases. And these coins have also been studied by various numismatists, art historians, epigraphists, and paleographists. One artifact in the whole series that has been generally neglected, and it has usually escaped the attention of both the numismatists and the archaeologists, is the religious tokens, which I'm going to talk about. Well, archaeologists dismiss them as something of very recent origin, because no religious token has been found in excavations. On the other hand, the numismatists consider the study of tokens as something of paranumismatics, which is on the fringes. So it has somehow, the object of this paper is to see that how the study of religious tokens provide an insight into the development process of the popular imagery and its cross-cultural and inter-religion influences. So this is roughly the outline of the paper. First, the development of popular religious imagery and the antiquity of the Hindu religious tokens, which are commonly known as the Ramtankas. And then the cross-cultural and inter-religion influences, and then we have got religious tokens of various other religions. Then the continuation of the legacy, how the tradition has continued in our own times, and finally some concluding remarks. Talking about the antiquity, two broad types of religious tokens have been reported, and they have come to light. One, the South Indian series, which is usually dated from roughly 11th to 12th century AD. And the other one, which is completely delinked from the South Indian series, which is towards the end of the 18th century, in fact. I'm sorry, I don't have the visual for the very first series of South Indian religious tokens, but I'll show you the other ones. The earliest piece that depict the figures of Ram and Sita were issued during the reign of the Hoysal rulers of Dwarsamudra and during the 11th, 12th century. And it is not certain whether these people were intended primarily as a tokens or they formed a part of the general currency. What they showed was a seated figure of Rama and Sita on the obverse, and the reverse had the inscription in Kannada which read Sri Ishwara. Michener, who has worked extensively on this series, says that, I mean, his belief is that the inscription might refer to Lord Shiva, and he says that these pieces may well have been issued by a Shaivite temple. But as it can be seen that Ishwara in the textual connotations, it's a very generic term to denote Almighty. The actual word for which is usually used for Shiva is Maheshwara. So whether these figures represent Uma Maheshwara or Ram Sita is still being questioned. And the why during this period we start getting the tokens or these pieces bearing these religious figures. One of the arguments which is put forth is that it might have been influenced by the spread of bhakti movement, which was spearheaded by Ramanujacharya during the almost the same period, 11th, 12th century. But again, this is the whole, the bigger issue of the antiquity of Rama worship in South India, which experts would shed light on. Then, towards the end of the 13th century, the Yadav king, Bhilana V, he laid the foundation of his own dynastic rule in Devagiri. And their tokens, you can see here, depicts these two figures, which are identified by Ram and Sita. These are Darbar with an attendant holding a parasol here. And on the reverse, there is a very faint image of standing Hanuman. And there's a legend which has not been read or deciphered so far. It is a Kannada legend all around. And these are the tiny little pieces in gold which are cup-shaped. And for these particular pieces, we do have a very significant chronological marker in the form of treatise called Dravya Pariksha by Thakkar Peru, written in 1318. And this gentleman, Thakkar Peru, was a mint master of Delhi Mint. And the treatise mainly deal with a series of instructions to his son that what are the different kinds of coins coming to the mint and what are their weights and purity and things like that. So what he actually calls them is also very significant. He calls them that these are the Sitarami coins. And I'd like to quote it from Dravya Pariksha. It says that Sitarami gold pieces are of two varieties, namely the Sanyog and Vyog. I'll come to that in a moment. If the coin is of 10 mashas, he says, in weight, that's about 9 gram, and 10 ban in gold, that is purity of about 83%, it is worth being kept for worship and not to be exchanged. Now, this, again, as I said, that it's a very important chronological marker, and at least we are able to identify the antiquity of these particular pieces which are identified. How these coins traveled to Delhi, where they were described by Thakkar Peru, is also can also be conjectured with certain amount of certainty. We know about the Deccan exploits of Alauddin Khilji. And the large part of booty, which consisted of gold, which was brought to Delhi. And this treatise was written during the time of the successor of Alauddin Khilji, Qutubuddin Mubarak Shah. And it is quite likely that the anarchy and the instability of political system that prevailed after the death of Alauddin Khilji might have sent many of these pieces to the mint for remelting. Now, after that, we get quite definite evidence from the period of Vijayanagara period, 14th, 15th century. And there, these pieces, these cup-shaped pieces become quite popular and quite widely known. And the linkage between the surviving monumental remains, we know that there are two very famous Rama temples in Hampi. And in fact, one of the, if we see the coins issued by the Vijayanagara kings, one of the coins of Thiruman Rai actually depicts the figures of Ram, Sita, and Lakshman on their coins. So there's a definite linkage between the tokens which are available and which are ascribable to the Vijayanagara period and to the coins which are actually issued by different rulers. Coming to the second series, that is the series which originated in Calcutta towards the end of the 18th century, we find these are some of the very rare pieces which are found in gold, but otherwise most of them, these are either the brass or silver washed with gold or purely silver. The second point which I would like to mention is about the iconography, and what I have done in the a few slides that you'll see now, to juxtapose them with the examples of contemporary or later and popular as well as the classic art. So here you see the scene of the Ram Darbar. Sometimes he's depicted with all the three brothers and sitting on a throne, and Hanuman is figured here, as you can see somewhere here. And sometimes an additional attendant is added, so there are three brothers, and Ram and Sita and Hanuman sitting below the throne. Just the three brothers, Hanuman sitting here, Ram and Sita on the throne. The third variety we'll find only one mentioner calls him attendant, but obviously he's Lakshmana. You can see here with a kirit, and he's almost in the same dress as Ram is, and with Hanuman. Now Hanuman becomes a very integral part of the iconography that we have on these religious tokens, and if we see the textual references we get from Tulsidas, for example, where he says that Hanuman was actually the part of the extended family. Tum mam priya Bharatahi sambhai. So you are just like Bharat to me. Then the concept of various messages were conveyed through these tokens, and this is a very curious piece where the inscription is actually in Gurumukhi all around. And without any attendant, without the ideal couple is shown here, Ram and the Sita. The execution you can see on the throne here. So this is the first part. When we talk of the iconography, we once again revert back to Divya Pariksha, which says that these Sitarami coins or Sitarami pieces are of two varieties. One is the Sanyog variety, the other is the Viyog variety. Incidentally, the all the pieces which we get from the South India, those big gold cup-shaped Ramtankas from South, they do not show any scene from the Viyog theme. On the overs, we have the depiction of the Ram Darbar, and on the reverse, invariably, we have the depiction of standing Hanuman, and with or without inscription. In one rare piece from Vijayanagara period, we also have a depiction of Pushpak Viman. And on the reverse, sometimes we also get the marching contingent, so which is identified with the triumphant entry of Raja Ram into Ayodhya. So we do not have any evidence of the Vyog theme on the South Indian series, but when we come to the North Indian series, we have several depictions of Vyog, and sorry. This is one of them where only the brother duo have been depicted here. And obviously, this is the time when Sita was abducted by Ravana and they were searching. The other famous scene is the meeting of Hanuman and Ram. And these are the painting. And this is, of course, a later poster. And once again, the legend all around is in Gurumukhi. We'll come to the legend in a moment. As I said, that Hanuman becomes a very important part of the imagery of these tokens. And another scene from the Ravan war, when Lakshman was hit by an arrow and he lay unconscious, and Hanuman brought the Dhavalagiri Parvat with the Sanjeevini booty. So all that has been depicted. And the legend here is very garbled. Here, Raja Ram, Ki Jai, and Hanuman, and some fictitious date. Not only from the scenes from Ramayana, but also from the life story of Hanuman, like this one, when he leaped and gulped the sun, and you know the story. And instead of the complete name, it is Ham, which is could be the use of abbreviations in Hindi or the Sanskrit inscription. Later on, as the popularity of these pieces increased, not only the Ramayana themes but all other deities of Hindu pantheon, they also started getting represented on these religious tokens. And this is a very famous scene where Mahakali is riding the supine lion, Shiva. And the legend, Mahakali Kalkatte Wali here. And Kali Mata in Bengali, and Kali Mata in Devanagari here. And this is another where only the Jaya Ma Kali is the legend. These are obviously quite late. Then we have got Chaturbhuj Vishnu. A very crude representation of seated Lakshmi. Now, as we see that various religions were practiced in India, and it was quite logical to think that such a practice, which was very widespread amongst the Hindus, was also represented or was also adopted by the other religions. But before I come to that part, I'll just pause here for a while to raise another very important issue, that why is that we get a very fairly early date in South India and not until the end of the 18th century that we start getting these Hindu religious tokens or the Ramchankas in the northern India, though eastern India would be the more right word to be used. One explanation which is generally given that as we have seen that in South India it was a direct influence of the spread of the Bhakti movement by Ramanujacharya. So if we take that that argument, then why when the Bhakti movement was started in North India, such practice was not started in North India, for example? And the other is people like Michener, who have worked extensively on this series, say that North India was largely under the Mughal rule, and Aurangzeb particularly, he banned the idol worship and he destroyed the temples. So it was a fear of the royal displeasure which might have prevented people from actually issuing these tokens. And all. Now, both these arguments do not hold good. First one, as I said, that if a Bhakti movement was instrumental in getting these pieces issued in South India, so why not in North India? The argument which Mishnah raises, we know that Aurangzeb prohibited the use of Kalma on his coins. But what happened after the death of Aurangzeb in 1707? And it is not until the 1790s, to be precise, that we start getting these tokens. So there's a long gap to explain. My own assessment is that this is a practice which was started by the jewelers and the businessmen of Calcutta on the pattern of a coin of the East India Company. And I don't have a picture here, but you can see a lot of similarity between the two issues, where you can have the beaded border and the zinc coil represented. And these coins were issued for the first time in 1793 under Regulation 35 of 1793. So while there was an official issue by the East India Company, these coins were copied into the religious tokens on the same pattern, and then they were issued and they circulated throughout the trade routes, starting from Calcutta to Banaras to Delhi to Lahore to Multan. Now coming to another aspect of the cross-cultural, is that Radha Krishna and Ganesh also finally gets. The legends and inscription that we have on the Hindu religious tokens, for South India we get Kannada legend written in Kannada script, but also Hindi legend in Devanagari script. North Indian legends are by default all garbled. What is to be meant as Ram, Lakshman, Janaki, Jai Bolo, Hanuman ki, it is sometimes written Rama, Lakshman, Janaka, Jai Bala, Hanumanaka, something like that. So which is, the idea probably is that the image was considered more significant to convey the message rather than the text in this particular case. We also have Bengali Legion standalone or in conjunction with the Devanagari Legion, but also very prominently the Punjabi Legion, which would give us some idea about the area of circulation or issuance of these particular coins. Another very problematic area is the dates, which is fictitious. I have copied some of the dates which are usually found on these coins. 20106 could be anything. And one explanation for this date has been, again, given by Mishra, who says that they follow the Abjad system, in Arabic, that each letter of the alphabet is assigned a certain numerical value, and you assign that numerical value to the legend, and you get the numbers. So you get the date, actually. So he has tried to, but the question is, can we explain the usage of Abjad system on these religious tokens where we do not find its usage except for one, on Jahangir's coin? These are not coins, actually. These are portrait medallions. In the entire series, we do not find a use of any Abjad system. So if that is the case, and that also does not explain all the dates that we find. So this is really an enigma, and at present, I do not have any answer for that. Now, coming to its influences on other religion, one prominent religion was Sikhism, and the usage of religious tokens was almost contemporaneous with the Hindu religious tokens. And what we get here is, on the obverse, we get the depiction of Guru Nanak, who has been shown sitting with his two disciples, Bala and Mardana, one of whom was Hindu, other one was Muslim, which apparently represented the teachings of Guru Nanak, that there's no Hindu and there's no Muslim, and all people are one, things like that. And the legend here is Guru Nanak, instead of Baba that we are very accustomed to, it's written here as Saab, Guru Nanak Saab. So that would give you some idea that what is the period we are talking about, when the Saab has gone into the vocabulary of the community. And here it is Sat Kartar, Om Sat Kartar. On the reverse, either it is the shloka of the opening shloka from the Japuji Sahab, or written in Guru Mukhi script, or we have got the 10th Guru. Here, the Guru Gobind Singh. And this is a medal which was an order of Guru Gharmanya, which was instituted by Maharaja Bhupinder Singh of Patiala. And this is the medal. And you can see the similarity in the iconographic representation. And one feature which is striking here is the depiction of, in the Sikh iconography, you will always find Guru Gobind Singh depicted with an eagle. Now, this is a much later coin, token, which is ascribed to Guru Hargobind Singh. You can read here, Guru Hargobind Singh, Guru Hargobind Singh here. But again, he has also been depicted with an eagle here. And the story which is depicted in one of these narrative panels in the Golden Temple is that Guru Hargobind visited one of the villages which was, where there was no drinking water, and with the tap of his horse's foot, there was water. This is the story. But another very famous depiction by Subha Singh, if you see the Sikh iconography, that this, I'll go back for a minute. Here you won't find any eagle with the depiction of Guru Hargobind, whereas with Guru Gobind Singh, it is always the eagle. So maybe either this inscription is not proper, or there's something wrong with that. Coming to Islamic religious tokens, apparently it's an iconic traditions and canons of Islam do not permit the depiction of any animated objects. But we do have the depiction of Al-Buraq here, and it is written here, Buraq. And this is the mythological animal which took the prophet from on his celestial journey from the Miraj, from earth to heaven and back. And this is a poster which is not very old, but what is interesting here is Sarma Picture Publication. and the, this is Burak, Burak al-Nabi, the Burak of the Prophet. And there's a share over here, I can read it out for you. Ho Mubarak aapko Miraj Mehboob-e Khuda Ho Gaya Roshan Jahan Mein Deen-e Ahmad Marhaba. Translated as, it's, I think clear that this journey may be blessed to you. Then we also have the depiction of the Prophet's mosque at Medina. And here it is in a very crude calligraphy, it's Medina Sharif here. Just 2 days back in the Fitzwilliam Museum, I come across another graph, what's it, pictorial Islamic coins which depict the Karbala, the. So within the Islamic religious tokens, you can differentiate between the Sunni tokens and the Shia tokens. So it went up to that extent. But mostly these religious tokens are inscriptional in nature, where you find the kalma in the center and the name of the four Orthodox caliphs on the sides here. And sometimes they were copied from the coins of the Mughal emperors. And so here you'll see the kalma, and on the reverse, the name of the ruler, in this case, Akbar. Then we have got religious token. I'll just run through. These are very modern one. Buddhist tokens. This particular token was minted as recently as 2005 in the Mayer Mint at Germany. Then Christian, here it is written Isa Masi, Isamasi. And on the reverse, it is a copy from a tantra, yantra, which is usually found in the on the Hindu tokens. So you can see the cross-cultural. Finally, the legacy which has been continued, and after say mid 20th century, increasingly all these products got more and more commercialized and commoditized, and what you see is the Diwali tokens, which have become very popular and very prevalent in our own times, and all sorts of, from Diwali tokens to memorial tokens. And this I've chosen as the last slide, the patriotic tokens. And here you see the Mera Bharat Mahan, and written in Mera Bharat Mahan with the depiction of Charminar here. So from religious to secular and beyond. Before I conclude, I'll just take 2 minutes to. I would like to refer back to the title of my paper, Money of the Gods. And this was taken. A cue was taken from the Money of the People, which is the title of the book of by Romani Yogi, who has also worked on these coins, who in turn borrowed it from Linecar, who had written extensively on the tokens. My point here is that, as has been seen from the foregoing discussion, that unlike other tokens like the bus tokens or the canteen tokens, none of these, the role and purpose of these religious tokens were altogether different. And they were not performing any of the roles of which a coin or the money is supposed to perform. So, as a metaphor, therefore, this title was selected to represent a money where perhaps it was useless for purchasing anything in this material world, but certainly it was a means by which the divine blessings or divine ultimate happiness could be sought. It was money of the gods. You may agree or may disagree, but certainly it was the currency of the faith. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for running out of time, so we should move on to our next session. People need to even.
Thank you. Yeah.
But I'm sure any questions, you can take this approach. So, can we have Dr. Interesting Gupta, please? historically, Mr.